Our third presentation is Gate Road Development Experience Using Continuous Haulage at Glencore's Ulan West Longwall Mine by Brett Murray. Brett Murray has been in the underground coal industry for 15 years in high productivity longwall mines, both in New South Wales and Queensland. He has been in various roles focusing on the supply, installation, and maintenance, high capacity conveyor belt systems, longwall systems, and development systems. Please welcome him.
All right, thank you for the introduction, Eric. Look, I suppose today my presentation is more, I suppose, from the end user focus rather than the supply focus. There are a lot of similarities between our system and the one that Toby just presented. However, you know, the different markets and I suppose the Australian conditions, we have a system that uses monorails to advance all the supplies and ventilation, which is uniquely different to our operation and provides different challenges over conventional sort of ventilation and power supply systems. I just want to, before I get into it, just thank Longwall USA for the invitation today to come and present, as well as Komatsu for extending the invitation also. So if we could just go through the agenda I want to talk to today. If anyone was here Monday, I would have heard Peter talk about Glencore in Australia. I'll recap that for the people that weren't here on Monday. Go back through specifically Ulan West mine and the mine overview, location of that. Talk about the development history of the Ulan West operation, you know, since we started operation or developing in 2013. For everyone, I'll spend a bit of time just going over our 4FCT development system configuration, go over the general arrangement and some of the key pieces of equipment that is on that. I'll then sort of break off into some data analysis. Now, we do have all the time models that exist to look over the different sets of data. I've tried to focus the data I've got specifically around identifying a couple of key trends, and I wanted to go over the three different gate roads that we've had our unit installed in to talk about how the system has developed and then how it's improved over those three different gate roads. And I've sort of done the presentation on the assumption that the system is does advance quicker than a conventional shuttle car unit. And when I get to the end, I'll sort of put some summaries of findings over how the system over the three panels has actually improved in performance over those sort of four years of operation. I will touch on some challenges and a particular major incident we did have in our last panel, and I'll finish with some questions. So Glencore in Australia, Glencore has got I suppose, into the energy, minerals and agriculture business in Australia. I specifically work at Ulan West, which is in the energy sector, specifically located in the Queensland, New South Wales, on the east coast of Australia. Glencore's got, you know, those 17 operations over the two states in Queensland and New South Wales, and primarily exports its coal to the wider market. As Peter said, we typically export in excess of 150 million tonnes per annum, and we'll do that. So we look at Ulan West mine location. We're actually located here out in the Western Coalfields. So the specific location, that's about 4.5 hours west of Sydney and Newcastle. We access the port in Newcastle via rail for export. I've just shown a photo of our box cut facility. Ulan West, took advantage of an old high wall from an open cut operation, excavated a box cut and basically gained its entry to the mine from that location. So if we give a bit of background behind Ulan West. So Ulan West isn't actually the first mine at the Ulan complex. It's actually part of the Ulan complex. Ulan has another underground longwall operation that's been operating for some time. Both longwall operations now run 400-metre sort of high-capacity longwall systems. The advantage around Ulan West was the ease and access from the box cut area, and some of the key benefits that were set up around the mine were the actual extended gate road lengths and large block volumes. As you can see, the panels range from sort of 5.8 to 8 kilometres, or 4 to sort of 6 miles long, up to sort of 14 million tonne blocks. So in our operation, the longest blocks are going to take over 18 months to longwall retreat that entire panel. Just as a key point to note, there are a lot of different roster cycles that run in sort of in Australia. Our sort of philosophy is running the low cost Monday to Friday option. We don't actually do anything on weekends in terms of production, and we since longwall was introduced, run 5 days a week and run 2 maintenance shifts in every unit per week. So effectively, we've got 13 operational shifts per week, and they're about an 8 3/4 hour shift. So I'll just give a history of where we are today. See over here, we've just kicked off our longwall 5 longwall. It consists of a Komatsu longwall system, the complete package. We've got the PRSs, the 7LS shearer, coal clearance system, and the coal actually comes out of that longwall onto a Komatsu conveyor system. Now, due to the length of the conveyor, our conveyor's got about 4.5 megawatts of installed power, 2 powered trippers and a drive head to take that coal out to the trunk belts and out to the wash plant. Right now, the FCT is actually out of the mine. We finished up the FCT in the top end of Main Gate 5 here, so we had to actually drive in by the current face right to the back end here, and then have spent the best part of since January when we finished up there demobbing that entire unit as we're pre-installing and getting ready for the longwall in Main Gate, longwall 5. We currently have a development, two gate road development units and a mains development unit. So both gate road development units, one of them has actually got a twin miner unit currently running a Sandvik MB650 and a Joy 12CM30 with two 10SC42 shuttle cars. If we go to the Main Gate 7 unit, it's another conventional 650 miner and 42 shuttle car unit. It sort of kicked off earlier in the year, as you can see it down here. And the mains unit's just a conventional 1230 shuttle car unit that's working its way towards Main Gate 8. And as I said previously, the FCT's out preparing for overhaul. So we talk about the development history at Yulin West. Since we kicked off in 2013, we've had a number of configurations. When we started the mining activities from the box cut, we basically had four 1230 units went into the mine. I'll actually go back to this and just quickly show. When we started off, this tailgate, the first tailgate, is actually accessed via portal, so it didn't actually go through the mains. And then we effectively had two gate road units and two main units for a period of time until we progressed into our second gate road unit, which was Main Gate 2. At the time, due to the length of the panels, we had invested in a number of different technologies to take advantage of increased productivities. And we actually installed a shuttle car monorail system. In that particular system, all the minor supplies, so the ventilation, power, water, all the things are actually on a monorail system that actually follow the miner with a tow arm. So the idea is that we reduce the flit time and reduce the actual ventilation vent tube and all the panel setup delays. And when we do a belt advance, we just move the entire system up. We then progressed into sort of Main Gate 3, where we installed our first FCT unit with a 1230. I suppose took the next step there, and then consistent move that through to Main Gate 4, and then most recently Main Gate 5, we actually got rid of the bolting constraint. So Main Gates sort of 3 and 4 got rid of the shuttle car haulage constraint, and then into Main Gate 5 got rid of the bolting constraint as well. So I'll spend a little bit of time and just go through our general arrangement of the actual FCT system. Very similar to what you saw in the previous presentation. However, we only run a two-heading gate road development unit, and we run a complete monorail system for all the services. When the FCT was first delivered to site, we actually set up the entire system in a mini build and did what we call a compatibility. So we installed every component from the in-by-in to the out-by-in miner, the FCT DMU, auxiliary fan, the DCB or the gate end box, as you might call it. It all gets basically mounted onto the different components, and we went through the system's design criteria and made sure that it actually met the requirements for the mine before we put it in underground. On the picture on the right there, you can see the FCT is actually flitted off And we basically set up the mini build with a heap of undulating floor and simulated all the corners that the machine needs to actually operate around to convey the coal and continue to operate. So we wanted to make sure that when the machine was actually underground and cornering around corners, that it didn't actually go off track and get stuck and have any major issues. So we spent a lot of time setting that up. So the machine logic, it's a mobile conveyor mounted on a traction chain following the continuous miner throughout the pillar sequence, transferring coal from the continuous miner to the DMU with a single remote operator control that operates both the DMU and the FCT. Now, our DMU is slightly different to most typical DMUs. Because of the length of our gate roads, our panel belt doesn't run through the DMU. We actually have a separate integrated boot end that it's got the ability to side shift, and we actually discharge from a DMU belt onto the panel belt. So when we do an advance, we actually take belt out of the loop take up from the longwall belt and advance the system forward. And I'll talk about that in a bit more detail a bit later on. So I just wanted to show just a mind plan on how much space is actually required before you can actually install the system. You know, the DMU is 240 metres long, the FCT is 175 metres long, and the actual, you know, the monorail system is sort of can be into the excess of sort of 600 to 700 metres long at full extension to be able to move between all of the crosscuts into the different headings. As you can see here, we've got to do quite a significant amount of development to open enough pit space to even start the installation. So we're at sort of 12 cut-throughs of mains development before the system's even available to be installed to commence the gate road drivage. That's just something to consider. So these next sort of few slides are going to be, there's a lot of data, just a lot of graphs. I don't want to spend too much time focusing on the specific numbers. I really want to look towards the trends. Now, what I did was try and sort of package up 5 years of machine panel data and take out some, just have a look at some key trends that we use to try and improve and increase productivity at our mine and ultimately, I suppose, measure the success of how we've been operating. So what I've sort of put up here is the three different gate roads, main gate 3, 4, and 5. This is just a simple plot of time and metres, how long it's taken us to develop the entire unit, and metres in the side there. So this is the actual number of metres the FCT was in operation in each of the units. So sort of that 9, 11, and sort of 14 kilometres of gate road advance through the period. Now you'll notice a couple of key sort of defining features here. As I mentioned previously, we're a fived operation currently with a longwall operating. However, until we started actually cutting longwall coal, we wanted to get the longwall opened up as quick as possible. So we actually spent the first sort of 3 years of our operation as a 7-day operation maximising, getting our longwall into production. And then as soon as the longwall got into production, we reverted back to a fived operation to reduce the costs of labour and just take advantage of our productivity of that system. Now, what's also in this graph is there's no filtering of data, so all of the known, unknown sort of bolting conditions and all the different stress areas that we've been through, major incidents, shutdowns, all the things we've had is just in here, and you can see sort of in the later one there we've got a very large sort of change in advance rate, which was a stress notch. And if I sort of go back to this image here, it's actually when we drove up past this corner here, we had a massive stretch notch come across from these Yulon number 3s, previously completed longwall. So we spent a lot of time, months, moving sort of a couple of pillars while we did a lot of primary sort of megabolt support off the miner to go through that. So it's very hard when you're looking at data in this sense to sort of really make anything out of it. So this graph's very busy, I apologise for that. All I want to do is just, show the separating trend between the two. Now, what I've got here in three different colours is availability is the solid line at the top and utilisation is down the bottom. The different colours represent the different panels, and there's a couple of lines which you can't actually see on this one here, but we installed the first FCT at this point here, so we actually did have an availability drop when we installed it the first time, and we did actually work through some teething issues as the system sort of got up and hit its sort of productivity targets in the first instance, However, once we sort of got over those issues, you can see that for the Main Gate 3 and Main Gate 4, the availability sort of hovered fairly consistently. What you can also see, though, is the utilisation has actually trended down over that period. And what that's basically demonstrating is that the faster we're advancing, the more times we're actually stopping to advance. So our rate's increasing, and our supply chain that's bringing in supplies and all the supporting infrastructure to move the mine up is actually being put into a lot of stress. And we're also travelling a lot further as we move further into the mine. But there's a key point here where you can see we installed the MB650 and took away the bolting constraint of the operation. And we basically saw nearly a 10% change of increased availability of the entire system, and we actually saw our utilisation fall away, and that was basically as a result of the rate increasing significantly over that period, which I'll go into the next slide here. What I've tried to do here is just try and put it simply into the amount of operational hours in average that takes us to move 100 metres, that just takes out all the weekends, pillar cycles, belt advances, and just to try and show how the system has operated. Now, through the first two periods, we're fairly consistent. We did improve from Main Gate 3 to Main Gate 4. Now, we did sort of 100 metres in about 35 hours on average in Main Gate 3. Now, that does actually sort of, when you go through it, Yeah, it might not seem like a great rate when you average it out. It's only about 2.84 metres per hour. But it was still far in excess of what we were getting with shuttle cars over that period as an entire panel average. Into Main Gate 4, we dropped another nearly 5 hours off the 100-metre advance rate. All you can really see there is that when we put the MB650 in front of that 4FCT, it really took advantage of the system's ability to move forward, and we dropped another 16% off that right down to 25. And I'll point out that not only did we drop it down to 25 op hours to move the 100 metres, that average also includes nearly sort of 3 or 4 months of significant, primary support off the miner as well. So if we didn't, need to use the system through there, I'd say it would be a lot further improved as well. But it was a great result for us so far. So that's a lot of data in a snapshot. What does it really mean? What does great look like? Now, what I've got up here is a picture of our site SCADA system. We've got communications on our Sambic machines and our FCTs, so we actually measure all of our bolting and cut cycles and all the different functions off the Sambic machine. So for our bolting pattern and we do a meter advance in the sump, we get about we've got a 5 minute cut cycle. So that basically gives us some system records in around 41 metre shifts, the 101 metre days and 1,012 metre months, which is, when you look at it like that, it's actually quite a good achievement for what we're doing compared to our shuttle car units. When we started looking at our mine and trying to give our operational team and our own sort of team internal targets, if we can do a normal week, cut out the entire pillar in about 2.5 days, and combine that with the two maintenance shifts and then do all the supplies and a belt move and cut out 240 metres an entire shift and basically do a pillar a week, that delivers the advance rate to support our longwall retreating at our sort of capacity we want to export at. All right, so I'll move into some of the challenges that we experienced. These range widely from operational challenges, engineering challenges. There was a lot of things we identified and got rid of in the early days around the design phase, and there was the things that we sort of missed and had to come up with solutions in the mine. I'll put some pictures here just showing the operational constraints of the system. So our gate road sort of widths are that 3.2 metre height, which is only 10 foot high, around 5.4 metres wide, 18 foot wide. You can see there, when you actually put everything in the heading with the monorail ventilation duct, FCT, DMU, and the secondary monorail system, there's actually not a lot of space. So it's quite challenging when you're moving, the entire system up to keep the clearances between this monorail system and the actual FCT on the DMU. Through the process, we sort of identified that the 240 metre long DMU, it runs on rails and has to be straight. We had some practice at the face where we had some offline drivage and realised that we had a really small tolerance of 100 millimetre window that we couldn't sort of work outside of on the face. Otherwise, the actual DMU would actually push into the ribs or come into this area here and cause us problems. So, you know, we had to put some operational controls in place to make sure that the guys were mining dead straight with the lasers and all the things we use. And in main gate 5, with the auto cut system on the sanding machine, that's improved as well, which is taking all those issues out of it. Another key point is the actual monorail system. So the bolts that actually go up to hold both monorails, it's actually really important that they're actually put into the right location. Having sort of those bolts not surveyed and put in the right position can create a lot of delays around the actual monorail tramming with the miner. The miner's got a tow arm that pulls the system around, and if the system jams up, we find that we're not obviously advancing at the rate that we want to, and we get stuck on flits and spend a lot of time off coal. So we basically had to come up with a process to survey that and into our pillar cycle, how we come back and make sure those bolts are in the right position. Another thing that we sort of encountered on the run was interaction with our mine explosion barriers. In our mine, we have a bat bag colony that sort of sits on the roof, and when we never really considered how that would interact with the monorail, we basically were faced that the monorail system, as it's moving forwards and back with the miner, both the secondary system that chases the FCT and the primary monorail would actually knock down the colonies and make those colonies sort of ineffective. So in the immediate sort of fix at the time, we had no choice but to increase our cut height. Now, the challenge with our conditions is that if we basically go into the floor breaks up and we have a very, very difficult floor to work with. And if we go much more into the roof, we get really close to a couple of what we call the penny bands that create some roof issues. So we had to, which changes our bolting requirements. So we spent a reasonable amount of time at a 3.4 metre cut height to increase that clearance to enable those bags to, continue to operate. However, we worked with one of the suppliers and redesigned and implemented a low-height back bag. So we had to actually challenge the market to, change the norm. And they developed a back bag for us. We could bring our system back into its original design parameters. Look, on an engineering front, we heard in the previous presentation, the system has to be treated like a longwall, in terms of how it's managed and how it's operated. It isn't just a shuttle car and a fan and a couple of cables running around a panel. The FCT DMU, there's quite a number of triple VF drives, quite a number of electrical enclosures. We've got a lot of, what we call catalogs and emergency stop systems, lanyards, pull wires, a lot of electronic systems that move around the place. And, we had to focus on upskilling all of our trades to be able to fault find and ensure they understood how the machine worked, because if it did break down, the entire system was down. In the early days, in the Australian market, we had a large exposure to triple VF drive sort of earth leakage risks, and due to the number of triple VF drives in the system combined with the 1230, and I know the Komatsu guys at the time did a lot of work in developing the filtration and the drive stops to eliminate the risk associated with the potential electric shock in that instance. Look, mechanical delays, because the system is so much larger, albeit in our system, overall we've had less maintenance delays since implementation. When you do have them, they're less frequent. However, the delays are a lot longer than we would typically see in a conventional unit. So there were some things we had to go over. I spent a little bit of time on probably our major incident that we did have. It was early in main gate 5 after we commissioned the panel. The boot end actually failed during advance. So what that means basically was, here's just a picture of where the boot end system is. Now it's just a picture of the belt lifter boot end arrangement. What typically happens is you've got sort of 3, 4, 5 operators standing around this. As the DMU is actually using its propulsion cylinders to pull itself forward and pulling belt out of the loop, the crews are actually building structure and feeding it in here as the system advances. In this particular instance, as it was advancing, the belt wasn't actually paying out and the propulsion cylinders were just pulling tension onto the system. So after about 8 or 9 pushes, there was enough tension into the system that it actually created this failure point, and the entire frame moved 18 metres out by fairly rapidly, carrying, and sort of went over some of the crew in that instance. So fortunately for us and everyone involved at the time, there was no injuries or no major incidents. It was an extremely large near miss. Now, in Australia, from that sort of incident was a significant incident, and I suppose an incident investigation was carried out by the regulator. And you know, I suppose in this case, the regulator chose to pursue what we call in Australia a causal investigation. So the idea of this investigation is to have a no-blame investigation where that any key learnings that are found throughout are communicated to the wider industry. And in this case, we worked with the OEM, the regulator and the site team to go through and do a detailed review of what happened to understand the key learnings. And in this case, the three causal findings identified with a mechanical design around that sort of tow area and the connection point was inadequate, or less than adequate. There was parameter management wasn't adequate, and the procedures and systems of work at the time weren't followed. Now, it's easy in hindsight to look back and go, well, it's a longwall belt. Longwall belts that are running, you know, 5-6 kilometres long can have tensions in that system running over 4,500 tonne an hour, sort of in the 300 to 400 kilonewton range. So the belt's, you know, is got enough strength and capacity, so the belt's not going to fail. In the design review stage, if you look at a conventional sort of DMU, the panel belt's usually only a 1,200 sort of wide belt that actually runs through the system, and ours is obviously a 1,600 longwall belt, and we never foresaw that this would actually be a failure point. Parameter management, now the two systems, the actual DMU move-up system and the belt system actually communicate with each other, and we found that the parameter that actually ensures the interlock between the two was actually deactivated at the time of the incident. So the DMU was advancing without getting a sequence passed from the outby system. And yeah, there were some procedures and systems of work in place that weren't being followed. So look, if anyone wants to get a detailed report on that, and that's widely available on the New South Wales Resource Regulator's website. If you want to see me after, I can and give you that link to read through it. It's quite an exhaustive report on what happened in that instance. Look, if I want to try and summarise our experience using the FCT in the last three gate roads, there's been a lot of positives, a lot of things we've learnt, and a lot of things we're going to consider for the future. We've got a lot of development to go. Our panels are moving into the next sort of stage of our panel lengths. We're sort of going to our longest gate road areas, and now our conveyor belts are going to three sort of booster drives plus drive heads, so moving from sort of 4.5 to sort of 7 megawatts of installed power. And the amount of development required in a panel to get there is becoming more and more. We're spending up to 2 to 3 years in development to open up those panels while the longwall's retreating. So, and in today's world, the longwall's becoming more reliable and more capable of overrunning development. What the data basically told us that the availability of the system was maintained and actually improved over the three systems. Utilisation had been trending downwards over the 3 years, and there's a number of reasons for that. However, that data gives us a good opportunity to sort of break it down further and go and investigate how we can improve the supply chain to reduce the amount of off coal time that we're experiencing to advance the unit, and then take advantage of that increased productivity. And as I said previously, we saw that 16% reduction of operating hours to advance that 100 metres, which was quite good. So if we break it down and look at how our site would sort of budget moving forward, if you look at a conventional unit, we sort of budget the 3.18 metres per op hour. The FCT combined with the MB650 delivers a rate increase over that unit of 44%. We're currently working towards overhauling the systeming and putting that into the next panel moving forward. So I'll just have a little video here to just show a couple of different things. So this was, the unit going off the mini build for the first time and being trained down the mine. It is quite impressive seeing it in real life. In a number of different areas. Even in these sort of areas, it was a lot of key learnings. I was into the panel for the first time. You can see how tight, I suppose, between all the infrastructure it is there on the monorail systems. with the FCT and the Minor, just in a normal gate road. So, well, I suppose this is the more recent flit this year, where it came out of the mine, where we're looking to dismantle it. One of the other key challenges is actually flitting this machine over 10 kilometres on cables is quite a challenge, having enough power supplies for it. So we actually worked with one of the local power generator sort of hire suppliers to develop the a power train that we can use to actually use underground. In New South Wales, we have explosion-protected diesel engine systems to do that. So we've actually took advantage of this flit to actually get a system where we can actually now remove the flitting cable constraint and be able to move that by itself to take away all the cable handling and all the issues experienced with moving it around the mine. All right, thank you. Any questions?